This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. It's the full spectrum. We've got news. Entertainment. Interviews. And so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, an effort is underway to bring new life to a cemetery in the middle of Jackson. We'll tell you what it's all about. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Tuesday, October 31st. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. You might miss Mount Olive Cemetery if you didn't know it was there. It's in a bit of a state of disrepair, but that's changing thanks to the help of our next guest, Heather Wilcox, who is a neighborhood development assistant at Jackson State University. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, I realize you and I went to Mount Olive Cemetery this morning. I didn't think that it was Halloween. I guess we were appropriate with our visit today.
Yes, 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 indeed.
And you taught me a lot about the cemetery. I mean, I guess... it's because there are so few headstones remaining there, and some are in disrepair, but there are really few of them, and I was surprised because why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the cemetery and about how many people are actually buried there, because you'd never know it from the number of headstones.
Sure. Well, I can bop to that.
Right.
So Mount Olive Cemetery is located on John R. Lynch Street, across the street from the College of Business at Jackson State University, as well as it's across the street from the Masonic Temple. And our research finds that the cemetery originated as a plantation in the early 1800s. And so at the turn of the century in the early 1900s, it transitioned into a privately owned African-American cemetery. And so it's been all around almost 200 years. And so because the cemetery is so old, there has been some headstones that have been damaged, and there are some repairs that are needed. And so we wanted to try and highlight the importance of the cemetery, as well as do some preservation work in the cemetery. And so originally, when we went through the cemetery, we was able to identify about 268 burial sites. After further
you did a walkthrough.
Yes, a walkthrough that you could physically see headstones and mausoleums, and there's about 268 that you can physically see. So we decided we wanted to find out more about those individuals, and we went down to Mississippi Department of Archives and History and started researching and pulling death records. And so after hundreds of hours of pulling death records, searching through who was buried in Mount Olive Cemetery, which is indicated on the death record, we discovered that it wasn't 268 people, but it was roughly about 1,500 individuals buried in Mount Olive Cemetery.
That's a big difference.
It is a big difference. And what we can say is that the 1,000 or so burials, we just can't identify where they're at. So we know that they're there because of the death records. They just don't have any headstones. Many of the burials, about 22%, are actual babies buried there. So they would have smaller graves, and they don't have any headstones as well.
You might have already said that, but when did the cemetery open? I know we saw today, I saw one damaged headstone that was from 1906.
Yes, yeah, so our research indicates that the first burial that we have documented is in 1807. And that was prior to the city of Jackson actually being a city. And so, and then of course, the street that is adjacent to Lynch Street used to be named Master Street. And there was a plantation in the community where Poindexter Park is located. And so we believe all of these pieces fit together perfectly to indicate that it used to be a plantation. And there are several burials of ex-slaves that were born pre-emancipation. And those are indicated on the headstones.
Is the cemetery currently considered a historical site?
So, yes. Over this research, so we received funding from Mississippi Department of Archives and History to do this research. And part of that funding, we were supposed to write up a nomination packet to get the cemetery listed on the National Register of Historic Places. So we wrote that up last year. And in June of this year, the cemetery was actually listed on the National Register of Historic Places, which was the only site in Hinds County to be added to that list. And so we're extremely proud of that accomplishment. And
you
so, yes,
be. You should be.
It is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, which means it's worthy of preservation.
Why? What about the cemetery caught your attention and made you want to put the many hours in that it is taking, not only has taken so far, but that it's going to take to restore some of the luster to the cemetery?
Well, I've been in the city of Jackson for about 10 years, and ever since I came here, I always wondered about the cemetery just walking past. And the cemetery is located on John R. Lynch Street, which is a heavily trafficked thoroughfare to Jackson State University.
Right, it's right in the middle of the campus, right by the tennis courts.
Yes, and so I've spoken with several individuals, and I tell them about what's happening, and they're like, oh, we've always wondered what's going on, who's buried in the cemetery, and it's almost like an afterthought. They are curious about it, but they just don't have the time and haven't taken the time to research it and figure out who's buried in the cemetery and how can we preserve it. So I was thankful to Jackson State University to be able to do this project under the auspices of my job here at the university with the Center for University-Based Development. And that's how I became interested in it, and so we wrote up a grant, and we got funded for about $15,000 this past year, and so now we're at a point where we want to unveil our research findings to the community, as well as unveil the only two statues that's been preserved in Mount Olive Cemetery, which are of James Jim Hill and Ida Revels Redmond.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break.
Sure.
And there will be a ceremony coming up soon. We will tell you about that as well. But I wonder, you know, sitting here just now, I hadn't thought to ask you this when I knew you were coming back. But I wonder, are there going to be plaques, some kind of explanation eventually, do you think, about what the site is?
Oh, absolutely. We have grandiose ideas for the cemetery. We want to put a feature water wall that is inviting, that brings people in, that in the water wall we want everyone that's buried there in etched on the wall, as well as some type of scripture that pays historic contributions to the people that are buried there. So we do have aspirations to write a larger grant to do more preservation work that includes a mural or some type of wall that details everyone that is buried in the cemetery.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're talking with Heather Wilcox. We will be right back.
Policy Institute provides independent, nonpartisan analysis of public and private policies that affect the financial security of Mid-South families and communities. HOPE's work supports efforts to create an environment that ensures that all people, no matter where they live, have the opportunity to prosper. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Together, there is hope. HOPEPolicy.org.
I'm Tavish Smiley, inviting you to join me each week for the Tavish Smiley Show. Be informed, enlightened, and entertained as my show blends the news and newsmakers, trends and trendsetters, with everything in between. Tune in as regularly featured commentators and guests engage in a wide range of topics from politics, health, finance, to pop culture and more. That's all here on the Tavish Smiley Show.
Catch the Tavish Smiley Show Saturdays at 9 a.m. on Cool and Current at WJSU.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We're talking with Heather Wilcox, who is a neighborhood development assistant who's working to restore the Mount Olive Cemetery right here on the campus of Jackson State University. I find that fascinating, too, that it's right here on the campus, and it really is a learning tool as well as a place to honor those who have passed, because there's much history there. I mean, really, when you talk about 1807, that was, 60 years before slavery ended. So it's quite a lot was going on then.
Absolutely. I spend a lot of time in the cemetery, and sometimes you just reflect and you cry and you just pray that you're doing the people that are buried there justice. And so when I, started doing this research, I had a conversation with my father about segregation, and he was in the Vietnam War, and he was telling me about when his fellow comrades would come back, that they couldn't be buried in the same cemetery as his white comrades. And so through this research, you'll find that it wasn't easy for African Americans to get buried during that time period. It's not something that we think about today, because those issues aren't the same as they were 100, 200 years ago, but it was really hard to get buried if you were an African American during this time period. And so some of that came out through the research. And then when you pulled the death records and you had this information, such as their birth dates, what their occupation was, and even their color classification, you are able to analyze and put empirical evidence together that tells a story. A story that's authentic to Jackson, Mississippi, and a story that may not have been told this way through this research.
And it makes it all that much more impressive to me when you see the statues that have been restored, because these statues are like 16 feet high. They're really magnificent. Tell us a little bit about the statues. And there's been so much talk recently of Confederate statues that would be going up, 100 years later. But for these statues to have gone up then is quite impressive.
Well, and you're exactly right. So when we began this research a couple years ago, the national conversation about Confederate monuments hadn't really hit the prime yet.
Right.
But when I was in the cemetery, I was immediately drawn to these 16-foot statues. They're the only two statues in the cemetery. And I knew then that when they built these statues, they wanted us to remember these individuals, and that's why they built them the way they did. They're hand-carved, made out of granite.
Oh, they're hand-carved. Yeah, they would have been back then.
Hand-carved, made out of granite and marble, and they're replicas of the individuals who are buried there. And again, like you said, during this time period, to have African American statues erected was extremely rare. And I'm not exactly sure how many statues of African Americans that we have in our city, but I will venture to say there aren't that many that was built during this time period. And it wouldn't have been allowed to have these statues built in a public space in the city of Jackson during this time.
You were telling me that you think that's why they were in the cemetery in the first place, because these highly achieving black folks would not have had the honor of having a statue in the outside of the cemetery in the city of Jackson.
That's exactly right, and that's why we felt it important to clean off the statues. They were covered in mildew and mold, and they were brownish in color, but now they're shining bright like a diamond. They're pure white as they were originally built, and we want it to be a tourist destination where people can come pay homage to these individuals, and just like they go see Martin Luther King Jr.'s burial site in Atlanta, Georgia, we feel that Jim Hill and Ida Revels are prominent people that we want other people to know about and who have laid the foundation for what happened here in Jackson, Mississippi.
And Ida Revels is fascinating because many people, I would venture to say, do not know that the first senator from Mississippi was, or the first black senator in the country was from Mississippi. Before, I believe it was 1867 or around that time. And that's fascinating. This is his daughter, correct?
That's correct. So Ida Revels Redmond was the daughter of Hiram Revels, who was the first African-American president of Alcorn State University, and like you said, a U.S. congressman, the first African-American elected U.S. congressman for this state. And she had many contributions. She participated in the suffrage movement and women's rights issues, as well as organizing voter registration drives, as well as youth education. But she also was the wife of Dr. Sidney Redmond, who was a local doctor and local doctor and lawyer of the community. And you can imagine how many families she consoled. And she also raised a son, Mr. Sidney Redmond Jr., who became an NAACP lawyer, who went on to fight for civil rights and education and won a large case in the state of Missouri. So she did a tremendous amount of work for the city of Jackson and the state of Mississippi.
Wow. If you could, because I don't want to run out of time without you letting people know when and where this ceremony is going to be.
So the ceremony is going to take place on November 9th, Thursday, November 9th at 11:30 in Mount Olive Cemetery. And we're going to be unveiling the two statues to the community, the preservation work, but we're also going to be publishing a booklet of everyone that is buried in the cemetery. And that booklet will be available for those who attend the ceremony.
And tell people again where Mount Olive Cemetery is.
So it is located on John R. Lynch Street, the 900 block of John R. Lynch Street, right next to the Kofo Building, across the street from the Masonic Temple, as well as College of Business.
I hope you get a good turnout. I know some very interesting people are going to be there. The choir from Jim Hill High School.
Absolutely. So Jim Hill, the statue and him has been, the school Jim Hill High School is named in his honor. And we're really excited that Jim Hill High School is participating in this event. And we'll be learning more about who Jim Hill is.
And I think Pam Jr. may be the new curator over at the museum.
Yes, absolutely.
The African American Museum.
So she'll be
Civil Rights Museum. I'm sorry. That's going to be opening soon. When is that? When is
December
it opening?
9th.
Oh, December 9th. Mm-hmm. But this is a piece of history that we can all visit now. And I really am excited to have come now and to revisit after even more work is done, because I really am happy that you caught it when you did. It was sad. We took a look at one of the mausoleums that had caved in. Some of the bricks had caved in. So anything that can be saved now is work well done, Heather.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'd just like to say sometimes we look over the things that we do have in the community. So we're excited that we're able to do the preservation work in the cemetery, that we have these relics in our community. And specifically, the cemetery represents three distinct periods: slavery, Reconstruction, to the Civil Rights era. And to have such a relic in our community, where excited that we'll be able to do and are doing preservation work there.
And really quickly, I know it's not completely surrounded by fencing, but you were telling me that some of the fencing that's there was donated by the one and only Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, so some of the oral history, when I've been speaking with individuals about the cemetery, they were telling me that Muhammad Ali did pay for the fencing in front of the cemetery. And we do have pictures of Muhammad Ali on John R. Lynch Street. We know he was heavily involved with the civil rights movement, and he was on our campus during the 60s. And so we believe that he did have contributions to the cemetery.
Heather Wilcox, keep up the good work. We're trying to work on a little project together about this, and you've got me all excited. I want to thank you so much for stopping back today, Neighborhood Development Assistant here at Jackson State University, and doing some real transformative work right here in the neighborhood.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hope Enterprise Corporation is a family of development organizations dedicated to strengthening communities, building assets, and improving lives in the Delta and other economically distressed parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Tennessee. Together, we can improve the lives of people in our community. Learn more about Hope's work to create opportunity where it is needed most. Hope-EC.org.
Welcome back to the Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. Today marks the last day of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. There's no good cancer, but some forms of the disease are much harder to detect. Kiwana Gayden was hit with a type of cancer known as inflammatory breast cancer, and she tells us why it hit her by surprise. One of the most common pieces of advice given to women is to do self-breast exams, to go in for exams, but that doesn't help everyone. Why don't you explain why?
That's right. Doing monthly self-checks and getting mammograms and ultrasounds is really good in terms of prevention for early types of cancer and some types of breast cancer that can be detected with those types of diagnostic tools. But with inflammatory breast cancer, mammograms and ultrasounds do not detect those types of breast cancer. And the most important part about that is inflammatory breast cancer generally 90% of the time does not present with a lump. And if it does have a lump, it's not solid. It's wispy like cotton candy, and that's one of the reasons why it isn't picked up by mammogram.
How did you find out then that you had breast cancer? Because that's the type of breast cancer you had.
So when I went to the hospital, just looking at some of the symptoms that I had with a rapid increase in the size of the breast, skin changes with dimpling, my skin looked like the peel of an orange. And so with those, that of the way that the skin looked, they thought it might have been inflammatory breast cancer, but to get a definitive diagnosis, they used the ultrasound mammogram along with a PET scan and an MRI and a biopsy. And those things together led to them determining that I indeed had inflammatory breast cancer.
Was it a surprise to you when you found out? Did you know already that there were types of cancers that you couldn't detect with the self-exam?
Well, I had no idea. I had never heard of inflammatory breast cancer. I've heard of many types of breast cancer, and I probably was one of those people, like many people, who always think that you can find breast cancer with a lump. So I was very surprised that there was a type of breast cancer that could not be detected with the usual tools that are given and emphasized to women to use to detect breast cancer.
And because of that surprise, do you think it was more difficult for you to, I guess it's hard anyway when you find out that news to deal with it, but how do you think that was affected by the fact that you didn't know and did not being able to find it before you detected those symptoms? Was it more advanced when you finally did detect it?
Well, in terms of inflammatory breast cancer, my breast cancer was staged at a stage 3, which is typical for inflammatory breast cancer. It typically isn't found before stage 3 or 4. So that was very much a surprise. I had no idea that the small place and growth that I observed 6 weeks earlier would turn out to be stage 3 breast cancer. So that was very much a surprise. In terms of trying to think how I would deal with it, I'm the type of person that would hit the ground running. So I was asking, after my initial shock and surprise, what could we do to start my treatment?
You were ready to dive right in.
Right.
Talk to me about who is most prone to get inflammatory breast cancer.
In terms of statistics, actually, African-American women are disproportionately affected by inflammatory breast cancer, and we're more affected by, it's very aggressive. So that's just one type, including triple-negative breast cancer that we are affected by. It actually hits younger women. I've seen women in their 20s and 30s
Wow.
that are affected by inflammatory breast cancer. Sometimes it can also disproportionately affect women who are a little bit overweight. The thing is, with inflammatory breast cancer, it hits women of all ages. So that's one of the things people need to think about. It's not just the breast cancer that would affect older women. So we're seeing younger women and African-American women affected by this type of aggressive breast cancer.
Is there any test that can detect it easily, or do you have to wait until you get these other symptoms?
Basically, what you need to do with any type of change to your body, kind of note what's going on. Like I said, I noticed things like increase in size, redness, dimpling of the skin. I actually had something in my chest that I could feel, but not everyone gets that. So the best thing would be to kind of know what's going on with your body and see basically what changes that you're detecting. Kind of keep an eye on it. And if
right.
you have those types of things going on, see if you can get in contact with your doctor. If you're not the kind of person that's getting the mammograms and ultrasounds, maybe try to push to get seen. And if you're not being heard because they're saying, well, it doesn't look like maybe an infection or you're too young, kind of find someone that will listen to you and just make yourself heard. You have to be your best advocate.
I know that you've been trying to get the word out to more women about inflammatory breast cancer, and kudos to you for doing that work, and that you're also engaged in some fundraising. Tell us about that.
Yes, I've actually just recently been appointed to the board of directors for the IBC Network Foundation, and it's a volunteer organization that, number one, raises funds for research for inflammatory breast cancer, and number two, serves to educate the public, medical personnel, anyone and everyone who has not heard about inflammatory breast cancer. So we have a campaign called Because Research Matters, and we're trying to get at least 5,000 shirts out into the world, and the shirt says Because Research Matters. We picked the number 5,000. Because we believe there are at least 5,000 cases of inflammatory breast cancer diagnosed every year. And the reason we're not sure if it's just 5,000 is because IBC does not have a definitive medical code. So it could be even more.
So tell people, Kawana, how they can get that shirt.
So you can go to the IBCnetwork.org, and there's a featured article called Because Research Matters. And if you click on that link, you'll see the information about the shirt and how to purchase.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. And I wish you well on your mission to not only inform more women, but hopefully to eliminate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, that's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at 10 on JSU TV Comcast Channel 14. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow at 4 for more of the Full Spectrum. We're on FM 88.5 and also online at WJSU.org. You can listen to us anywhere. Up next, Latin Jazz with your host, Dale Morris. Have a great evening.